Hey everyone, welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim. One of my favorite parts about working at Apologetics Canada is getting to meet the people who wrote the books that I read. For those of you who have been following us a little while, know that we host an annual conference. And over the years, we've had the privilege of inviting lots of different kinds of people. And one of those people that I find personally quite memorable is Natasha Crane. She runs a popular blog called ChristianMomThoughts.com and is the author of Keeping Your Kids on God's Side, 40 Conversations to Help Them Build a Lasting Faith. For today's special edition of the AC Podcast, we wanted to play for you the breakout session Natasha taught at the Apologetics Canada Conference 2016 called Apologetics for Parents, the Why, What, and How of Teaching Kids Apologetics at Home. This session was from 2 years ago, so Natasha will only mention Keeping Your Kids on God's Side, but since then, she has authored another book called Talking with Your Kids About God, 30 Conversations Every Christian Parent Must Have, both of which you can pick up on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or wherever you purchase your books. The recording of this session is part of a conference recording package from the 2016 Apologetics Canada Conference, which you can purchase from our web store. If you're interested, you can just go to apologeticscanada.com/store. Again, apologeticscanada.com/store and check out the various resources we have available for purchase there. Now, without further ado, here's Natasha Crane.
My name is Natasha Crane, and I write a Christian parenting blog at ChristianMomThoughts.com, and I'm the author of a new Apologetics for Parents book that just came out. I think probably most of you guys were out in the main session. How many of you guys were out there? Did you hear me talk a little bit about my background? Okay, so I'm not going to bore you with any more on that. It's called Keeping Your Kids on God's Side, 40 Conversations to Help Them Build a Lasting Faith. Excuse me. So we're going to talk about the why, what, and how of teaching kids apologetics at home. And usually when I'm talking to Christian parents, I'm talking to people who don't even know what the word apologetics means, right? Because most people have no idea what that means. So I'm kind of explaining, you know, the world is very challenging today, and these are the kinds of challenges there are, and here's what apologetics means and why it's so important. Kind of trying to convince people of that. But see, you guys are awesome. You're already at an apologetics conference. So this is a really exciting session to give because I don't have to spend so much time talking about why it's so important. I think most of you are probably here because you can see that this is important, right? How many people think this is pretty important? Okay. So the why portion of this is going to be brief. I'm going to keep it brief because I think most of you are here trying to figure out, well, how do we do it? Let's get to the practicalities of it. So just going to spend a couple of minutes on the why, and then we're going to dig into the what and the how. Does that sound good? Awesome. So why teach apologetics at home? Two reasons. Number one is that kids need apologetics. And usually when we talk about kids needing apologetics, two questions come up. Number one, is it even possible to teach kids apologetics at any age? And number two, is it necessary to teach kids apologetics? So is it possible? Absolutely. But it really requires us to reframe what we're thinking about when we think about apologetics. I think a lot of times we get this idea in our head, this really formal impression that, you know, we're going to wear a suit or something and teach our kids apologetics, something very serious, right? And it seems very formal and academic. And when you think of it that way, you think, well, okay, maybe like an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old could get this kind of stuff. But like, seriously, what can you do with a 5-year-old or 6-year-old? You can do a ton, and we're going to talk about that. But so it means that we have to just think about this differently. It's absolutely possible. It's absolutely necessary as well. So in terms of it being necessary, I want you to think about specific preparation and how important it is for us to specifically prepare our kids for what's ahead. When you go to the beach, you take beach toys, right? And you take your swimming suit and you take all the things for the beach. You're specifically preparing to go to the beach. And we take this for granted in our everyday lives. We specifically prepare for everything. But for some reason, most Christian parents are not specifically preparing their kids for their future spiritual life. But here's the good news. It's not some giant ambiguous bubble of challenges that the world is posing, as it might seem if you're just kind of getting started in this. There are a lot of really specific challenges that come up all the time. So when we know those things, we can absolutely prepare our kids to encounter them. We can specifically prepare them for those challenges. So is it possible? Absolutely. And is it necessary? Absolutely. Kids need apologetics today. And I think you guys all know that, which is why you're here. The second thing is that kids are not going to learn apologetics elsewhere. So maybe, depending on, you know, your own family circumstance, where you guys go to church or maybe a school that you send your kids to, maybe they'll pick up bits and pieces, but they are not going to learn all that they need to know about apologetics and how to build a case for their faith and how to defend it from these areas. So we really have to be the ones to take responsibility for that. It really does lie with us. So kids need it. They're not going to get it elsewhere. That is why we must have apologetics at home. Enough said, right? Are we all on the same page? We can move on. Great. So what does it mean to teach kids apologetics at home? That might sound like kind of a funny question, right? Because it's like, well, it means to teach your kids apologetics at home. But a lot of times what I see when I talk to people who are now familiar with apologetics is that they kind of have a vision of what it means that's not necessarily the best vision. And in fact, I have, after talking to a lot of people through my blog, I get lots of emails and I interact with a lot of parents that way and through Facebook and social media. And after talking to lots of people about this, there are kind of four approaches that everyone immediately goes to when they get excited about apologetics. It's like, I know about apologetics. I understand what it means. Now I'm going to teach my kids apologetics, and boom, they're going to do one of these four things. But the four things that I'm going to go through aren't necessarily the best way to do it. And in fact, after we look at those four things, we can flip them around to the opposite side and say, actually, this is what it's supposed to look like. So let's take a look at the first approach. It is not this, the handoff. So this is kind of like saying, honey, it's important that you learn how to defend your faith in case other kids say mean things about Christians. Here are some great books for you to read. And that is exactly how your kid is going to look. Very bored. But you know, it's interesting because I think this is the number one thing everyone goes to once they start learning about apologetics. I mean, many emails every week of parents who are like, this is so awesome. I'm so interested in this. I want my kids to know it. What book should I give them? It's the handoff, right? But the problem with the handoff is that it's totally dependent on your kid's interest level. Right? We don't just hand off other kinds of materials at them just and say, hey, here's something really important. You need to just read this. No, if something's important, we're going to engage with them. It's not hands off, it's hands on. We have to be engaged. The other thing is that kids lack a real world context for a lot of these things. So if we're not there to actively be discussing these things with our kids, they might not get why it's important. You know, there are lots of questions that kids have never considered. Like what I was talking about in the main session when as an adult in my 30s, someone said, you know, there's no evidence that Jesus exists. And I was like, whoa, I have never even thought of this question, right? Well, if you give your kids some reading material on whether or not Jesus existed, and this is like not even on their radar, and they're like, why are you telling me this? Like, you know, I know Jesus existed because I have the Bible, and they're not even at that stage. You don't have the opportunity to engage with them, right? And so it kind of goes in one ear and out the other. And so that's the problem with it. This is dependent on your kid's interest level, and it lacks the real world context. And the other thing is that it treats apologetics like a subject that is separate from their faith. And this is a big one for me. It's kind of my pet peeve because I think so many people see it as like, okay, here's the faith I've always learned, and then here's apologetics over here. It's this like totally separate thing. Right? But what I'm going to talk about today is how we integrate those things so that our kids are learning it seamlessly as they're growing up. And it's not like two different things. But when we take our kids to church all the time and maybe talk to them about Jesus at home and whatever we're doing, then we lay a book on top of that and say, here, read this. It seems totally disconnected from everything else. So it's not the hand off. Here's the next one, the wait and see. Honey, Jimmy is questioning his faith. It's time we introduce apologetics. So a lot of parents, think that, well, I will introduce apologetics when my kids start to have questions. This is a very common idea. And in fact, I have to say, I've actually heard a lot of apologists answer this question when people say, well, when should you address apologetics with your kids? And a lot of times they say, well, when they start asking questions, that's a good time to introduce this. Well, I would say that's way too late. Because one, some kids are never going to ask questions. And that could be because either they have the questions and don't want to ask them for one reason or another, or it could be because they've never thought of the questions. Like the question that I was talking about before. There are lots of questions that you never even think about, right? So when we wait and see if our kids have questions, it's often too late when we get to that point where they raise a question. They've been mulling this over for the last 3 years. I hear from parents all the time who have teenagers, and they say, I don't know what to do. My kid just said that he no longer believes in God, and I didn't see it coming. I hear this a lot. Because they just assume, well, he would have asked questions. I've told him we have an open family, a good relationship. Of course they would ask questions. We've said ask questions. But kids don't necessarily ask questions just because you say they can. It might not even be important enough for them to ask a question. We might see it as the most important thing in the world. But it doesn't mean that they care enough, right? So it's really important that we don't just wait and see what happens with our kids asking questions. And again, even if they do ask questions, apologetics isn't some kind of tool that you bust out at the last minute and say, hold on, I have got an answer for that. I bought an apologetics book once at an apologetics conference, and I am going to answer that question. It's not like that. So we need to be doing this on an ongoing basis. Here's the learn it all first, another popular one. Honey, I'll teach you why we have good reason to believe Christianity is true after I finish the 58 books that I just bought. So this is really tempting because I think as parents, especially when we're really busy and we're already kind of overwhelmed, when we start hearing about stuff like this, we're like, man, this is a lot of work. I don't know how I'm going to fit this in. There are a lot of good books out there, but I don't know how I'm possibly going to read them. Which books do I start with? Where do I go? Oh my gosh, I can't do this. And so then parents start just like getting stuff and studying it, and they don't want to even approach their kids until they feel like they have all the answers. Well, here's the thing. If you read 58 books, that's great. You're still not going to have all the answers. You will never, ever get to a point where you feel like you can answer all the questions your kids have. You just won't. So there is no point in waiting until you have accumulated some critical mass of knowledge. And those of you who are really new to apologetics, and maybe you're just thinking about these things for the first time, that is my encouragement to you, that there is no need to feel like you have to become some kind of expert and do all of this before you can talk to your kids. As you're learning, that's the opportunity to teach your kids, and they're going to learn right along with you. So don't be the learn-it-all first. And the final approach, and maybe some of you in this room are this person, is the eyes glaze over. Honey, this week we're going to learn the 26th most common objection to the column cosmological argument and then study Dr. William Lane Craig's response. Now, if you're laughing at that, this is probably you. So when people get really into apologetics and they get over that initial hump of feeling overwhelmed, like the person in the last picture, then they kind of tend to overcompensate and they end up way over here and they're overwhelming their kids with information. And they're going way over the top in a way that just bores their kids to tears, and it becomes an uphill battle where the kids just aren't even interested in it anymore. And so it becomes totally irrelevant, and then you don't have their attention span. And it becomes a negative thing. It's going to become something that eventually when they hear the word apologetics, they're like, oh man, I remember apologetics. I remember the 26th most common objection. And they do not want to hear about that. So these are the four common approaches that it seems to me almost everyone gravitates to. But the thing is, if you just flip them over, it actually gets you to where you need to be. So if I were to say, let's cast a vision of what it means to teach apologetics at home, here's what I would say. It's not the handoff. It's very hands-on. It's engaging with your kids. It's not about handing them resources. And that doesn't mean that resources aren't helpful and good. There are a lot of great resources out there, and there should be more. It just means that is not the sole thing that we need to be going to hand to our kids. And a lot of people will talk to me about that and say, oh, I just wish there were so many more resources. But I think it misses the point that we have to take that accountability ourselves for understanding this so that we can talk to our kids and engage hands-on. And it's not the wait and see, it's proactive. And this is the most important thing. And we're going to spend the entire rest of our session here talking about how to be proactive. So I'm going to come back to that. It's also not the learn it all first. Instead, it's opportunistic. It's using the knowledge that you have to bring them in at the times that are relevant for your kids. And finally, it's not the eyes glaze over. It's being relevant and getting to your kids where you can. So we could spend a lot of time talking about any of those four things, but like I said, proactive is the biggest thing, and it's probably what you guys are thinking about. Like, okay, if I'm going to be proactive with my kids and I want to do this stuff at home, what am I actually doing? And so that's what we're going to spend the rest of the presentation talking about, is how do you do this at home? So when I say proactive, first of all, what does that mean? It's two things. It's intentionally setting aside time each week for your family to engage together spiritually, and it's intentionally using that time. I have to tell you, it is like my biggest pet peeve when I talk to parents and I say, it's important to set aside time in your family's schedule, at least 30 minutes a week, hopefully more than that, but start with 30 minutes, and people kind of, you know, they kind of get shifty and they're like, I don't like the idea of scheduling the time. I want it to kind of just organically filter through our home. Well, I could spend the rest of this time and more talking about why it is so important to set aside this time each week, because quite frankly, none of the rest of the things in this presentation will happen in your house if you do not have time set aside at home. It's just not. I'm going to give you a bunch of ideas of what you can do, but it is just not going to happen on the way to school. You might get bits and pieces. And that's really important. We have great conversations on the way to school, by the way. And some of it can happen over dinner, but you are not going to be able to do these things unless you're actually sitting down together as a family in a given week and saying, okay, this is our time. This is our time to study together. So let's talk about how we're intentional with that time. I'm going to go through four kind of key ideas that you can use. And then I'm going to just lay on you 15 more, and we're not going to have time to go through those in detail, but I just want to kind of put them out there so that they are in your mind. But before we go into that, I just want to say it's really important to make a plan. And I have been really guilty of this in my own home, that you can end up all over the map. Because when you get excited about apologetics and you're like, okay, I want my kids to learn this and I want them to do this and we're going to study this and I have this cool book, it's kind of like you leave them lost and groping for, okay, well, how does this all fit together? So if you have not done any apologetics in your home with your kids, this is my first recommendation, is that you focus on first setting up that dedicated spiritual space, your time each week, and then within that, that you make a case for the truth of Christianity. So that's going to look different whether your kids are teenagers or if they're young. But there are ways that you can teach them no matter what their age is. So this framework is applicable for all of you. And if you're going to teach your kids about the case for the truth of Christianity over the next few weeks, say, then this is basically, these are the four key areas that you're going to want to look at. Number one, the evidence for God's existence. Number two, the exclusive nature of religious truth claims, the fact that not all religions can point to the same truth. Number three, evidence for the resurrection of Jesus. And number four, the reliability of the Bible. This will form the backbone of everything else that you do going forward. So once you have done these things to whatever degree and detail that you feel is necessary for your kid's age, once you've done that, then you can come back and do all kinds of other things. Then you can either go deeper into each of these topics, or you can branch out. So for example, my book has 40 different conversations that you can have with your kids in it. And all of those things, they both support these, and then they go outside of that to other important conversations, like, does the Bible support slavery? Does the Bible support rape? What is the evidence for evolution? Is faith the opposite of reason? These are all questions that are super important, but they should come after you have established the case for the truth of Christianity. That's kind of the other thing that I would warn you about, is that a lot of times parents are jumping right to, let's help our kids defend their faith. It is a tough world. But if your kids have no idea why they should be defending what you're teaching them to defend, they're not going to care, right? They have to be able to define what they're defending and understand the value of it. And once they do, then you're in a position to then say, okay, now let's talk about what the world is saying. Let's talk about how we can pull these things together and defend the faith. So this is a starting point before you get into anything else. And if you've already been doing some apologetics at home, then you can either go into these in depth or start making your own plan to do some of these other conversation topics. So I'm going to go into these four ideas now that I was talking about. And the first one is Bible study. So this sounds very obvious, right? Bible study. But here's the thing. There is reading the Bible, and there is really studying the Bible, and there is studying the Bible with an apologetics mindset. All right? Now, this is where your knowledge comes in. And I'm going to give you four examples here of studying the Bible with your kids in an apologetics mindset. And keep in mind, you cannot study the Bible with an apologetics mindset if you are not studying the Bible in the first place. And research shows that fewer than 1 in 10 families is actually studying the Bible together in a given week. So if you are not studying the Bible, this is where you go. You study the Bible together with your kids, because if it's in the Bible, it's being challenged by skeptics. Have you guys ever heard atheists say that the easiest way to turn a Christian into an atheist is to have them read the Bible? Has anyone heard that? That's what they say. And there are all kinds of memes that they've made that they pass around the internet mocking us, because they know that there is tough stuff in the Bible and they know that we don't know about it. They know that there are almost no kids out there that have heard some of these really difficult things that are especially in the Old Testament. And there's actually a website called evilbible.com, and you can go to it. I'd encourage you to go to it and see the kinds of things that they're saying. And I have seen people, they come to my blog and they copy and paste from evilbible.com. It gets millions of visitors a year. And it's so easy for them. And they know that Christians don't know these tough parts of the Bible. So studying the Bible with your kids is huge. So let's talk about what that would mean apologetically speaking. Well, let's say that you have just read about one of Jesus's miracles with your kids. And this could be a kid of any age, okay? I want you to all understand, no matter how old your kids are, this applies to you. If you are not apologetically minded, you're just going to say, okay, and Jesus turned water into wine, and let's go on to the next story. And you just kind of keep moving with these things. But if you have just a basic understanding of apologetics, which you can get from my book or any other book that's out there that you can pick up, you would know, okay, miracles. That's kind of the subject we're talking about here. Miracles are a favorite thing for skeptics to attack. So when you're talking about this miracle, you can kind of stop and you can say, you know what? So we just read about one of Jesus's miracles, but why, 5-year-old or 18-year-old, why do you think a miracle is even possible? See what they say. Because here's the thing. If God exists, miracles are possible. If God does not exist, miracles are not possible. This is not a tough concept, yet it is a fundamental piece of apologetics understanding that our kids should have. It really isn't that complicated. My 5-year-old and my 7-year-olds, they understand this, that if God exists, miracles are possible, and if God does not exist, miracles are not possible. So this is a very simple example of just stopping to think when you're reading things in the Bible, what are the skeptics saying about what I'm reading? What would a non-believer say about what I just read to my kids and what we're studying? And then it's an easy introduction to it. And it doesn't even mean that you're going so far off base that you're not studying the Bible. This is absolutely part of studying the Bible. When my daughter was, I don't know, maybe 4, I asked her, well, what do you think a miracle is? Just to get that conversation going. And she said, well, we were talking about the feeding of the 5,000. And she said, well, I think Jesus cut the bread into 5,000 pieces. You don't even think about how your kids are thinking about this stuff, right? But then when you hear that answer, it's like, okay, that's naturalism. That is an example of a non-miracle, right? So she didn't even have a concept of that. But if you've gotten some background on this, then it's very natural to say, okay, so how do we define a miracle? Why are miracles possible? Another example, let's say that you read something, one of the accounts in one of the Gospels. Well, maybe you know that that account is also in another of the Gospels. If you know some basic stuff about apologetics, you know that skeptics love to point out contradictions in the Bible. How many have heard that the Bible has contradictions? Everyone has heard this claim, right? Well, when we're talking about the Gospels, we're talking about accounts that are based on eyewitness testimony. And when eyewitnesses are giving their accounts, they will differ on details for various reasons. They're telling it from different perspectives. So here's a great opportunity, if you have this in mind, that you could then go and say, you know what, let's read this same story, the same account in another gospel, and let's look at the differences. Have you guys ever read the resurrection accounts side by side in all the gospels? If you haven't, please go home and do that. They are quite different. And skeptics would love to inform you of that. And they would love to tell your kids about that. They are quite different. And there are a lot of harmonizations that have been attempted. And there are lots of different opinions on how they might fit together. But this is a perfect example of being aware of the challenge and then talking to your kids about the nature of eyewitness testimony. Number three, let's say you just came across Mark 2:5. Son, your sins are forgiven. Well, most people would breeze right past that. This is Jesus saying this to the paralytic. But if you have some basic apologetics knowledge, you're going to know, well, this is a perfect opportunity to point out the fact that Jesus never said, I am God. This is one of the examples in the Gospels where Jesus, though, claims to have the same rights and privileges of God. Okay, so if you go right by this, this would be a great opportunity to tell your kids, you know what? Did you know that Jesus never actually said, I am God? So why do you think that his disciples and everyone around them believed he was God? That's a good conversation starter. And again, you could be having this conversation with a five-year-old or a teenager. This, you can answer them in different degrees of detail and maybe have different follow-up conversations, but these are basic conversations. This isn't something that's like way out there only for people in academia to learn. This is basic stuff. Jesus never said, I am God. But there's all kinds of reasons why we can tell from the Gospels that he claimed to be God in many other ways. Okay, the last one, why was Joshua fighting the Battle of Jericho? So have you guys heard the song? I don't know, in Canada, did you guys grow up singing Joshua Fought the Battle of Jericho? You guys know this song? So in my book, I have a chapter on the killing of the Canaanites and why God would command such a thing, because this is a hot button topic for skeptics. And I talk about how I remember singing that song as a kid and I loved it so much, but now that's like really weird to me looking back, because skeptics would look at that and think, this is insane. This was like the beginning of this huge genocide of the Canaanites, and they're singing about it, all these little kids, right? So your kids study the Battle of Jericho, but have you stopped to ask them, well, why was Joshua fighting this battle? Have you stopped to point out that they were going into the Promised Land and they were going to kill the people who were there? I'm guessing you probably have not pointed that out. So then it's a very clear next step. Well, why do you think God would have commanded such a thing? I've had that conversation with my kids at their age, talking about the balance of God's love and his justice. And this is something that is woven together throughout all of the Old Testament. All right, gonna move it along in the interest of time. I could go on about the Bible examples for a long time because there are a lot of great Bible examples. But let me just say this, that if that seems overwhelming to you and you're like, well, that sounds really great, but I have no idea how I would ever think of those things, I just want to encourage you that these are things that are in sort of basic apologetics books. You could have come up with any of those examples having just read my book, for example, or from many other books. So I promise you this is entirely feasible. Here's one that if you're feeling overwhelmed by the last one, this is super easy. A questions night. You can go home knowing absolutely nothing tonight. And I know you know more than nothing, but I'm just saying that. You can go home knowing nothing and do this. You sit down with your kids and you say, hey, we're having a questions night. I want to hear any question that you have about God and about Christianity and faith. And do this on a regular basis. If you have set up your family spiritual space, so you have this time already every week, this is a great recurring use of that time. We do this all the time, at least once a month. And we used to do it, we did it every week for a while, actually. We were doing it every Wednesday night for a while, and then we started doing it each month. But kids do not run out of questions. They really don't. I've asked people who read my blog to do this. I said, go home and ask your kids what questions they have tonight. And I did this in a Facebook group too. And people went home and they came back and they posted just this enormous list of questions. And I just had to wonder, did everyone who was posting all these great questions, did they know their kids had these great questions? Because if you didn't ask, you might not have been and probably wouldn't have been having these conversations. This is so easy to do. And I can tell you the most important conversations that have taken place in our house have happened on questions nights. Absolutely. They ask fantastic questions. Explicitly tell your kids that any question is okay so they don't have to fear, what will mommy and daddy think if I actually ask this question, like, why do we know God exists? And I'll tell you, when people came back and they said they were reporting their kids' questions, that was, I think, the number one. How do we know God is actually there? But how many of us are actually talking about that on a regular basis if we didn't stop to ask our kids that? We're just hauling them off to church every Sunday, right? And praying to the God that they can't see, assuming they believe he's there. But then you stop for 1 second and ask them, well, what questions do you have about God? And they say, well, how do we know he's there? Pretty basic, right? But it's a convicting question. And the other thing I want you to know is that you don't have to have fear about this. A lot of parents kind of get the deer in the headlights look when you suggest opening the floor to your kids' questions because they're like, huh. I don't think I could actually answer any of my kids' questions. But the good news is that when you can't answer your kids' questions, it's actually just one more great opportunity because you say, wow, I'm so glad you are thinking about that because now I don't know exactly how to answer your question and I want to look that up with you. And here's how we go about finding answers to our questions in a faithful way. All right, so and if you are uncertain if your kids would have questions, and I can almost guarantee you that they will, but just in case you're worried, maybe just bring a question or two to throw out in case. And that's a good one to start with, actually. If you think they might not ask questions, throw it out to them and say, so how do we know God is actually there? See what your kids say, and that will open up a great conversation. Okay, next one is parent-initiated questions. So this is another one where your knowledge really comes into play. And I'm passionate about this because so many times we think, oh, well, I'm going to answer my kids' questions. And that's like my goal here is that I'm going to be able to, steer them in the right direction. But we have to be bringing them questions too. I promise you that most kids, the vast, vast majority of kids are not coming to their parents asking, does the Bible really support rape and human sacrifice? Most kids, unless they saw something from a friend from evilbible.com, most kids are not bringing that question to you, but they will encounter it eventually. It's our responsibility to be the ones who are going to bring that information to them. I wrote a blog post a couple months ago, and it was called, If Your Kids Are Someday Shocked by the Claims of Skeptics, You Didn't Do Your Job. And it's true. It doesn't mean that it's all in our control whether or not our kids are believers, but it is in our control whether or not they're shocked by the claims of skeptics. So we need to be the ones who are putting out these questions in front of them. There are many questions that kids won't ask. And in fact, looking at all the responses and the types of questions that people had gone out to their kids and gotten them to ask and report on Facebook, they were sort of in a very narrow range. It was like, how do we know God is there? And, why did he create us? And, if he knew Adam and Eve would disobey, why did he create them? And what about the tree? So there was sort of lots of great questions, but kind of in a narrow range and hardly anything about the Bible. Probably because most parents aren't studying the Bible with their kids. So it is incumbent upon us to bring those challenges forward. And these are just a few examples of that. Is faith the opposite of reason? Are Christians less intelligent than atheists? Have you guys heard that? I mean, they say all the time, like, oh, there are all these studies. Christians are less intelligent than atheists. And so they use that as kind of a trump card. So that's a big question. These are all from my book. Is Christianity responsible for millions of deaths in history? This is a huge one. There's so many articles saying, look at the bloodshed by Christians. How could this be true? I've gotten emails from atheists saying this is the question that led them away from faith. But most kids aren't going to ask this. Does the Bible support slavery? Why were books left out of the Bible? I didn't even consider growing up after I had spent my 600 hours in church that I was talking about in the main session. I never considered how the Bible was put together. Never occurred to me. Not once. I just thought, well, these are the books that were written, right? But that's not true at all. There were hundreds of books written in the first few centuries after Jesus. So how did we get the books and why were books left out? How do we know the Bible says what the authors originally wrote? This is challenged all the time. And why do Christians have varying views on how and when God created the world? That is a huge topic. So we have to bring our questions to the table too, put them in front of our kids. Those are kind of like the flip sides of each other, right? You have the question night where your kids are bringing the questions, and then you have parent-initiated questions where you're bringing the questions to them. Okay, the fourth one is what I call logic games. And this is actually something fun that you can do during your spiritual space and throughout the day. And this started because my daughter was the queen of bad logic. She loved to say things that didn't make sense. It was driving me crazy. So we actually had to sit down and talk about what logic means and how we need to be able to look at what people are saying and see, does this make sense? Are we drawing a valid conclusion here? So we started the good logic and bad logic game, where my kids, and they were probably like, I don't know, 4 and 6 at the time. This is about a year ago when this started. They then started calling each other out on good logic and bad logic. And logic is critical for apologetics, right? Because we can't prepare our kids for every single challenge. We can prepare them for the challenges, but they're going to encounter those challenges wrapped in all kinds of rhetoric, right? So they not only have to understand challenges, but they have to be able to think about the challenges and how they're hearing them. So this is just an example of what you would see in our house that we've been doing. And this has been really impactful. And the kids actually love it. They actually asked to play the logic game on the way to school. I'm serious. They're like, can we do good logic, bad logic? And they want me to come up with them. So somebody, this is something that is heard in my house all the time. My shoes are not in this room. Therefore, they're not in the house. Do you guys hear this? Your kids are looking for their shoes and they think because they're not there, it must not be anywhere. Well, my kids now know if they hear that, they're going to call out from the other room, bad logic. Just because they're not there doesn't mean they're nowhere in the house. So this is the idea of it, that they can call it out as good logic or bad logic, but then explain to you why. Here's another one to throw out. We can't see God, therefore he must not exist. Okay, so that's bad logic, and we can explain why, and we can get them to tell us why. And this isn't just about applying it to Christianity. This is in all areas of life, and so they like all these other examples too. Like, there is ice on the sidewalk. That means I shouldn't run on it. Good logic. It's good logic because we know there's a risk that you're going to slip and fall. Here's a really good one. Mary says 5 + 2 = 8. Jim says 5 + 2 = 9. Karen says 5 + 2 = 4. That must mean that there is not a right answer. Can you guys see how that applies to faith and the conversations that we're having here today? This idea of religious pluralism that, well, everyone has different answers and therefore there must not be a right one because there are 6 billion people on the planet, right? So there can't be a right answer. Well, you can get your kids thinking in a critical way without even talking about those specific issues, because they should be able to call this out for what it is, even when it comes in a form like this. So you can strategically think of these kinds of examples to give them. And then finally, my teacher says God exists, so that must be true. Bad logic. It's an opportunity to talk about the nature of authority and you know, do we just believe adults because they are in certain positions of authority? So these logic games are really important. You can come up with tons and tons of examples, and you can have fun with that throughout the day. And especially if you have young kids, they use bad logic all the time, I promise you. If you start to really pay attention, you will see it, and you can call them out, and it actually encourages them to use better logic, which is a good thing, and it gets them thinking about these things. And you can do it with the youngest kids. All right, so I'm going to just throw this up at you. These are 15 other ideas that you could use in your spiritual space. We don't have time to really go into each of them, but to just get you thinking, Pick a word to explain or discuss. There are all kinds of apologetics, hot topics, like the word faith. What does faith mean? What is evolution? What is absolute truth? Depending on your kids' ages, you can pick a word that you can talk about, and you can spend a lot of time talking about that. Choose a news story to discuss. Lots and lots of news stories to choose from. There was a singer of a heavy metal Christian band who got put away in jail for the attempted murder of his wife. And this makes a great news story to discuss because then there was a whole interview with him where he talked about his fall into atheism, and he has since come back to being a believer. But news stories like that, you know, that wouldn't be appropriate for an older child, but that's a great conversation tool. And his name was Tim Lambesis. Has anyone heard of him? Do you know who I'm talking about? No? Okay. So the interview with him was great because he actually really got into the details of why he started to not believe. What an awesome opportunity to share this with your kids and say, look, this is how it happens. And these are the things that he started thinking about. Study another religion. It's really important we're not just teaching our kids about Christianity. So take the opportunity in your spiritual space. Don't feel like you're taking away from Christianity and studying the Bible if you're studying another religion. Not at all. You can study other religions and use that as a comparison and a contrast point for Christianity. Visit a different church. Watch a movie and ask your kids, like, let's figure out what are the secular views that we can see in here. Lots of examples of that, I'm sure you can imagine. Print an internet meme to discuss. Does everyone know what I mean by a meme? It's like a picture and it'll have like words on it that say something to usually mock someone else. There are memes used for all kinds of things, but that's kind of what you see them for. So if you Google religion memes, you'll have a field day. You'll have enough to talk about in your family's spiritual space forevermore. You'll come up with all kinds of things, like of atheists mocking Christians in these. Pick a celebrity quote to evaluate. Here, Google atheist celebrity quotes. Oh, another treasure trove of things to talk about with your kids. And this is really impactful because these are people that your kids know about and they're impressed by them and they think that they're great. Actually, if you Google that, Natalie Portman is one of the first ones that you'll see. And she has a quote that is, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but she has a quote about not believing in God. It's a very good one that you can discuss. Play what would you say if? This is an easy one. So, little Jimmy, what would you say if someone came to you and said, the Bible was written 2,000 years ago. Why do you believe it? See what your kids say. Put them on the spot a little bit. They'll probably, if they're young especially, they'll probably say, I don't know. And then you have the opportunity to start introducing the fact that, okay, does it matter how old a book is if it's God's truth? Does that matter? Let's talk about good logic and bad logic again. Good logic or bad logic? If a book is 2,000 years old, that means it must not be true anymore. That is a good one to go after. So you can read or watch something on space or biology from both atheist and Christian perspectives. Lots of things out there for that. Print out and discuss song lyrics from your kids' favorite artists. Oh, there's some good material in there. Pretend to be an atheist and have your kids try to convince you Christianity is true. It's an easy one to do. Have your kids pretend to be atheists and you try to convince them Christianity is true. See how you do. Encourage your kids to be on the lookout for examples of bad logic to bring and discuss. They're a little bit older. They'll probably be able to see when their schoolmates are saying things and they can come to you with those and talk about them. Read a book or article excerpt from an atheist author or read a book and article excerpt from a Christian apologist. All of those things are things you can do when you're being proactive. It does take some work. It's not like this stuff like falls into your lap. It is so much easier to drag your kids to church each week and not do anything else at home. But this is truly going to make a difference in your kids' lives when you proactively, intentionally set time aside and intentionally use that time. So I hope some of these ideas are helpful to you. I know it's a lot of different stuff, but I hope that it gets you thinking about what you might do in your own home, right? So thank you guys for being here. I hope that some of that will be helpful to you.